Come close to the phone, Glenn.
And the recording is ready.
Did you just join?
Peter Olson.
Oh, no, I've been here for a while. It's someone else.
Maybe not. Glenn, would you be so kind as to take a roll?
I would indeed. Christina, we've got yourself, I've heard Avery Doria, David Maher, and Peter Olson. Please tell me who else is on the call.
It's Liz, Glenn.
Liz, yes.
And Kelly Lance.
Smith. Pardon?
Kelly Smith.
Kelly Smith, yes.
And Lance Griffin.
Lance Griffin.
Thank you.
Who else? Anybody else? So we've got Christina Avery, David Maher, Peter Olson, Kelly Smith, and Lance Griffin with Liz and myself.
All right. What I was thinking we could do today, and I was hoping that we could do, and we can do this one of two ways. One would be to just discuss, now that everybody's had a chance to absorb them, the proposals that Peter had posted last week, along with some other ideas that some of us have come up with in the past week. Or in the alternative, we can go through Mike's email that he circulated that kind of grouped thematically some of the features of some of the PRO mechanisms, and to the extent that there's kind of strong feelings one way or the other about any of them or strong preferences, we can kind of flesh those out. I have no particular preference, and so if anyone on the call does, please speak up.
Christina, Liz, can I just ask you two questions?
Sure.
Number one is, I just wanted to give a quick overview of the polling results that have come in, because the 4th of May is the cutoff.
Right.
And the second was the report production.
Right.
So I'm happy to do that at the end to let the conversation run, but I need to do that. And can you speak up a little, because I can't hear you very well.
Okay. Well, I can't actually talk very loudly. I'm quite sick.
Okay.
So why don't we do this? I'll just make a note that at 5 before the hour, we'll stop. And I've just gotten an email from Tim Lee that he's not able to join, but is hoping to post some suggestions soon. Why don't we do this? I guess, Peter, I'm wondering whether, you know, David and Avery, if you have had any questions about some of Peter's proposals. I know that, you know, Peter has refined them a little bit since they were originally posted. So, Peter, do you want to just run through some of the additional features that we've talked about in the past week?
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah, okay, great. I was muted. I don't know how to do this. The question was, should I run through some of the proposal?
Well, run through your proposal at a very high level, and to the extent that we've kind of refined it in discussion amongst ourselves, how we would do that.
Right. There were three basic proposals. The outsourced sunrise, where we take the sunrise and put it like at ICANN or at WIPO once and for all, and have them run it such that the registries don't have to learn to do this one-off thing every time, or each new registry has to do it. We do it for them. That was the one. And the second one was these defensive removal. Somehow getting these domain names that people really don't want, just getting them removed rather than registered. And then the third thing was a name string. A name string notification, where it would be like people could subscribe to their trademark or their organization name, and then if anything came, any domain name contained that string, then you'd get the opportunity to oppose.
Who's got the construction going on in the background?
Yeah, that's me. That's Peter, yeah. So I should mute again.
Well, some of the additional features of it that we talked about a little bit are, for example, with regard to having a centralized database of verification and validation. And that would be, you know, something that ICANN could put out an RFP for, with the thinking being that, you know, just as PwC acted as a validation agent for .eu, that there might be another organization that would be interested in taking on that job, and then it could be centrally administered through ICANN, and trademark rights owners, rather, could subscribe to it in much the same way, for example, that they would have to initially submit an application, you know, name, address, et cetera, for the purposes of really just record keeping, and that at the same time they would also pay perhaps an, kind of an initial subscription fee, you know, $100, $50, whatever. And they would also have the opportunity at that time to either create kind of a deposit account against which fees could be drawn, or do it out on a pay-as-you-go basis. And the idea would be that they could submit the information and documentation to support all of the rights that they may wish to rely on in various mechanisms. And then this entity would validate those, or we could wait until there was a challenge or competing applicants to verify. And then participants in this kind of validation database could essentially then, just as new GLDs were rolled out, designate which ones they wanted to participate in and on what basis, in other words, on what right that had already been entered into this database and verified. Would they want to go forward? And this would kind of tie in with the watch service, which would really anticipate more of kind of an IP claim process as opposed to a sunrise, the thinking being in order to participate in the watch service, for example, and that, you know, we were talking with Mike this morning about it, so I'll use his mark. If Yahoo wanted a watch service on YAHO, they wouldn't be able to even request participation in that watch service and notification process until they had already established rights through the validation database. And what would happen is, in much the same way that the IP claim process required applicants for a domain name to acknowledge the existence of IP claims for that domain name and confirm that they wanted to go forward, that similarly you would anticipate a system that, for example, if Yahoo was notified that there was some domain name that contained the YAHO string, they would be notified. Simultaneously, the applicant would be informed, look, this has triggered, Yahoo has a watch notice issued based on a claim submitted by Yahoo, based on this right. You know, would you please, in order to proceed with the registration, you need to confirm, basically acknowledge that you've received this information and confirm that you want to go forward. If at that point the applicant wanted to go forward, then you would have a similar but preferably expedited dispute process, very similar to what .biz did with the stop, in the sense that the domain name would not be activated until after the period for the rights owner to object and the resolution of any objection. So that was kind of another variation that we've talked about a little.
This is Aubrey. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
A couple questions. One, the first one is, you would expect the same mechanism to work in IDNs as well as LDHs.
I don't see why not.
Okay. I'm sort of curious, concerned about. I understand that the words that are trademarked that aren't common words would probably get into this database easily. I'm assuming this database would be completely open and visible, and that anyone could challenge someone's entry. I guess the one that concerns me most is the variance, and how one really determines that a variant of a trademark that's considered, you know, qualified for that. It's not the word donuts, but it's a word like Yahoo. Or maybe Google. No, that one doesn't work out. But anyway, that's basically a non-word. How do you control that so that syllabic fragments that could show up in many different combinations that aren't the mark itself
aren't validated, as it were.
I'm not entirely sure I understand your second question, but with regard to your first one, the fact that somebody would put information in this validation database would not necessarily give them, at least in this aspect of it, any, you know, this is not a Sunrise database. It's not as if by putting information they're entitled to, automatically entitled to the domain name. So you could have, you know, 8 different entities putting in a claim for Apple based on various rights in various geographic locations. There's no reason why you couldn't do that. You're not making, you know, one superior to another. And in terms of the...
Apple was in, applesauce would be as problematic as Apple.
Or apple
pie, or...
But that would be...
Apple.
It wouldn't necessarily be problematic. Would it trigger a kind of notification to people who put in a claim for Apple, you know, a validation for Apple? Absolutely. Doesn't mean they would have to do anything about it.
But it would give those who had registered for Apple the ability to stop I Love to Eat Apples from registering until they were satisfied?
Well, it would basically be a delay. I mean, yes, in much the same way that with .biz, none of the names that were applied for through kind of the initial phase could get registered unless and until all the IP claims had gone through the process. So, for example, you know, using applesauce or do you want to use the I Love Apples? Doesn't matter, I guess. Say you had an applicant who wanted I Love Apples dot, you know, font or whatever. If Apple Computer and Apple Records and, you know, the Apple Growers of America and the Apple Growers of Europe had all put in validation claims for Apple, or whatever their mark or claim rights were, and had also, based on that, subscribed to the watch notice for Apple, yeah, they would all receive notification that somebody was seeking to apply for ilovapples.com, at which point, simultaneously, the applicant for ilovapples.com would get, you know, a notification saying, your name has matched a watch notice, or we can come up with the wording, but the gist of it would be that they would be notified that the name had been put on a watch notice and by whom and on what basis. And they could then say, they would then have to say, yes, I want to go forward with the registration because, and they wouldn't have to give the explanation, but internally they could say it was a, you know, group of kids who love apples. They don't want to go to the dentist, they love apples. So they could decide amongst themselves, you know, I love apples, you know, we're entitled to this. There's no reason why we shouldn't have this. And could say, fine, we acknowledge that we've received notifications of these watch notices, and we want to go forward anyway.
And then
once that happened, there would be a time period, which I think realistically would probably be between a week and 2 weeks, in which all of the parties that had, you know, Apple Records, Apple Music, Apple Girls America, Europe, et cetera, would have the opportunity, if they really wanted to, and if they actually thought that they would win, to object and try and block the registration of that name. In order to do so, and this is where Peter, if you could, depending upon where you are, or Kelly, if you've got your notes from our other conversations, you would still have to prove certain elements to win. It wouldn't be kind of a complete UDRP because there's no use in being made of a name. So that element would come out. But there would still be kind of a formal question, as if the registrar would automatically say, okay, well, you know, Apple Records has said that this has triggered their watch notice, and you're going to go ahead anyway, but I'm going to unilaterally decide not to give it to you. I mean, that's not at all what we envision.
Who adjudicates and who pays?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Audrey.
Who adjudicates and who pays for this all? So if I, as an individual, you know, not a very rich person, one of the I Love Apples Daily, and Apple Records said, sorry, you know, I challenge it, then who, A, decides that that's a valid challenge, and B, then who has to pay for them doing the blocking and doing the whole process? Or basically, does Apple Records, being richer than Johnny Appleseed, make them the obvious winner.
No, not at all. And in terms of the first question, I think we had envisioned that you would have the dispute handled by a dispute resolution provider. For example, I know that the NAF, the National Arbitration Forum, for example, handled the stop claims in the .biz process. You know, WIPO has handled kind of Sunrise challenges for Influence.movie. So, you know, we're envisioning that these types of challenges would be heard by those types of organizations. And I don't think we've made any decision on the fee, and I certainly can't, you know, speak on behalf of all trademark owners, but I would imagine that it wouldn't be unreasonable to say that the trademark owner or the rights owner or whomever the claimant is, there's the filing fee for the challenge proceeding. I mean, that's what it was in .biz.
We also discussed earlier today, Ms. Kelly Smith, the possibility that just having the applicant have to verify in the face of a claim, yes, I want to proceed with this application, might have enough of a deterrent effect that you could just then rely on the UDRP if indeed they chose to go ahead and use the name, and the rights claimant could say that was in bad faith.
Right. I mean,
so
for example,
this would be like an interim dispute resolution.
Right. And if you look, for example, at the numbers in the .biz proof of concept report, you know, that acknowledgement of a claim was really effective in terms of, well, the number of people who went ahead with applications in the face of that of IP claims was not, you know, I think it was less than 50%. I don't have the exact report in front of me. Actually, maybe I do.
And Christina, when we spoke earlier today, I envisioned that a notice would go out to the domain name applicants if not only their proposed name triggered a watch notice, but if the rights owner said, yes, I intend to assert rights against this name. So in your I Love Apples scenario, I anticipated that they wouldn't get such notice until Apple decided, yes, this is something we don't like.
We could do it that way. I mean, you know, it could work that way.
I think that might.
The problem with doing it that way, though, is that I think, you know, every time you have to go back and forth to the rights owner, you're going to slow down the time, you know, extend the time until the name can go live. That would be the only drawback to doing it that way.
Right.
Yes. Okay, I think I understand. I mean, I think it's strongly weighted in terms of those who claim property rights on words and against the individual, because I know as an individual, you know, if I get a letter that sort of says, Apple Computer is going to challenge you, I'm more likely to back off, even if I think I'm justified. But I think I understand what you're putting forward.
Okay. Does anyone have any other questions? David, I don't want to put you on the spot, and I certainly don't expect you to speak for the registries or even for your own registry. But what's your general reaction to kind of this idea of centralized validation and having more of kind of a watch notice type system?
I don't have any official view from the registry constituency.
Right. No, I understand that.
And but second, then my own from personal standpoint, it sounds practical and. I think it's better than a number of the other proposals that have been made. It's one of those areas where I'm somewhat, I won't say reluctant, but maybe diffident about getting into this because as an existing registry that has, we've been around so long that there was no thought of Sunrise or the PRO back in the early 1990s, and I understand that some of the registries have had considerable difficulties in administering the various sunset provisions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not speaking for them, but anything that can be done for the I get support. And didn't get a consensus be a reasonable approach. And that's my two cents.
Another thing that I have been thinking about, and I say thinking with emphasis on thinking, is whether another opportunity to kind of deal with the abuse of registration process after the fact, as opposed to having to go kind of through the full-fledged GDRP, is that whether there would be, this idea would work, you know, setting aside objections, but it would work only if it was something that we could do through the rules of the UDRP as opposed to having to, you know, deal with the policy itself, because in that case I'm not interested in putting it forward. But basically, you know, is there a way, for example, to kind of create a, I don't want to say a leisure pay system in a UDRP-type proceeding, but to basically structure it, for example, that when a complainant, and they'd still be bound by the various requirements that they've got to attest that everything is true and that they're not submitting this for purpose of harassment or for reverse hijacking, et cetera, that when they submit a complaint, they would submit their fee as ordinarily, and that would, when WIPO or NAF or whatever the provider is notifies the respondent that the proceeding has been filed, which they do anyway, that would start a kind of, I don't know, maybe a 7-day, a 10-day window, whatever, probably 7 days, within which the respondent would have to basically put up a bond, so to speak. You know, obviously nothing, absolutely not more than the filing fee, and it could probably be less than that. And the idea being that if the respondent didn't put up that bond in that time, that the proceeding would essentially be terminated and the complainant would be granted the relief it sought, and that would potentially reduce the fee for the complainant because, you know, the provider would need to have a panelist. And there would be no decision. That would be the other thing, is that there would be no kind of panel decision. There would be no panel appointed, no panel decision. It would just be, you know, transferred, canceled, you know, whatever. If, however, the respondent wanted to defend its right to the domain name and put up the bond, then you would go through the proceeding as regular, with the caveat that the prevailing party would get the amount refunded to it that it had put forward, regardless of whether it was the complainant or the respondent.
Hi, this is Aubrey. Again, I guess I have a problem with that, is that prejudice against the individual registrant who doesn't have a corporate entity behind them. I mean, any time as an individual you're saying that you have to pay, you're basically putting a threshold of richness in the path of somebody doing a registration. And it's less than petty cash for the company that wants to preserve and actually, you know, make rings around the onion sort of presentation, that they're not only are they defending the core, which is their property, but they're putting that sort of variant expanse around it, and you've basically made it very easy for them to stop individuals from participating.
I actually disagree pretty strongly with that, Aubrey, because as a practical matter, no trademark owner is going to go to the expense to prepare and file a UDR complaint against a domain name that is registered to an individual where the individual is clearly not using it for commercial purposes. It simply doesn't happen.
Yeah, and also I would add that, I mean, for Disney, there's thousands of marks out there that we can make claims against. So, you know, whatever it is, if it's $500 a pop, it's still $500,000. I mean, it's not peanuts.
Yeah, but if... Okay, you know, I mean, it's obviously not one that will resolve here. But that $500 for Disney is possible. That $500 for me is impossible. And so, therefore,
it's a cash flow issue for you. Sure, you've got to put, or forget that you've got to put the 500 in the pot, but knowing that statistically most of the people challenged would not be able to meet the challenge, basically makes it free. Or it makes it a cash flow issue.
Well, you know, not really, because in the event that the, you know, the respondent doesn't respond at all, I mean, it's not as if Disney gets its money back. You know, what this is trying to deal with, Aubrey, is the huge problem that you have all of these, frankly, cyber squatters who register all these domain names and don't respond to, they don't respond to UDRP. They never intended that. All they're looking to is monetize the name for as long as they can.
Yeah, no, I understand the problem, and I'm not arguing that the problem isn't a problem. I'm just sort of trying to look at it from the perspective of the great multitude of registrants who aren't squatters, and I'm especially concerned about those where they happen to go for something that's similar, that, you know, it's not Mickey Mouse, it's just Mouse. You know, or Michael Mouse, because that happens to be their name. And so I really looking for how does this affect the great multitude of registrants, the individuals for whom, you know, it's the $6 fee, it's the $70 once you finish signing up for all the things you've got to sign up for. And that's a big expense for them, or at least that's, you know, versus the corporate interest who's trying to, you know, widen, and in order to protect the core, which is their actual mark, that isn't a proper word, that's building these layers of the onion in sort of a Talmudic sense, is you make the defensive perimeter so far out so that you've protected your core, and in the meantime, a lot of regular people are basically excluded from the process. And that's the concern I've got. I'm not trying to
I understand,
the problem.
No, I understand your concern. And you know, I guess what I would just say, and I apologize if it wasn't clear, but it's not as if we're saying the rules of UDRP no longer apply. You still got to show that it's being registered and used in bad states. I mean, so it's not as if you're automatically saying that requirement goes by the wayside.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's the requirement that a lot of, you know, to be candid, I mean, that's the requirement that keeps most trademark owners from going forward when they decide not to go forward, is they're not, you know, it's not a slam dunk. And nobody wants to go forward with something unless it's a slam dunk, regardless of who the registrant is.
Right. But I'm saying that the bond requirement basically works to the advantage of the mark claimant. Because that's prior to actually having to go through with the whole UDRP process.
Well, you know, yeah, but it's not going to even come into play unless the person is, you know, using the domain name in a bad faith in the first place. So, but, you know, we're not going to agree on this one.
Right.
I know that. I mean, I actually thought long and hard about, you know, how to come up with this in a way that it doesn't impose an unrealistic burden. And frankly, you know, if somebody is truly using their domain name for commercial purposes, you know, you would think that it's generating revenue for them at some level.
Right, yeah. Well, we had a discussion in an earlier meeting, in the Who Is meeting, about how difficult it is to say what indeed is commercial purposes. You know, but anyway, so that becomes yet another issue. I understand. I understand that I'll probably have a minority view on it.
I'm just trying to think of other proposals. Peter and Kelly, may up to my forgetting, I think, have we covered all of the ones that we talked about?
I think so.
Just so I'm clear, is this proposal instead of Sunrise, or would it be coupled with the Sunrise?
Coupled.
Yeah.
Coupled.
In my view, be coupled.
Okay.
So Intel, depending on, you know, one of the TLDs that are coming down the pike, I may choose to actually have a name in that TLD that resolves, but I can pick and choose. And then if I just signed up to this name subscription idea, IP claims kind of idea, then that would be ongoing for all of the new domains. But I could cherry pick and participate in a sunrise, you know, for certain of the PLDs. That's how I envision it, that they work in tandem.
And were we talking about outsourcing the sunrise to WIPO or someone?
And I think it makes sense to have, you know, to come up with a way so that it can be outsourced. And, you know, I don't know that WIPO is probably falling over themselves to run it. But it then, you know, if you can find an external organization that is contractually obligated to develop and implement it, then, you know, you take the financial burden off the registries. You take the financial burden off the registrar.
Yeah, that seems like
Agreed.
A great idea.
I mean, that part of it, I guess I do agree with the salary again, that if there must be a process, that process be standardized, be the same for everyone, be verifiable, be public, et cetera, and be cost neutral to the registrant, at least the first part. That, in other words, we don't jack up the initial registration rate, then certainly that is better than, I think, the piecemeal individual. Each registry kind of does it its own way process. So while I may argue about what the process is, I think the generalization and standardization of it is a reasonable goal.
Right. I mean, and I hope personally, and again, this is, you know, this isn't something that has been finalized, but, you know, to a certain extent, I think, you know, the cost of participating in kind of the centralized validation verification basis, I mean, absolutely should be, you know, borne in great part in terms of the actual ongoing participation costs by the rights owner. You know, and it may be that as a practical matter, there would need to have to be kind of a one-time payment by the registry in order to have access to the data. But I would think that, and again, I'm kind of speaking blindly because I frankly have no idea how much it costs a registry to design and implement its own process kind of over and over and over. But I would have to think that there would be a way to structure that so that regardless of how much the payment was, that it was still significantly less than the cost the registry would incur in having to, you know, do this all themselves. And frankly, I think the only people who might not like it are likely to be people who've already gone, they've already incurred the expense. And so to the extent that they would view this as an additional expense, then I could, you know, that might be a source of objection.
But maybe they could bid on it.
What do you mean, Rick?
Well, I guess I was thinking, I mean, if they had the system in place, maybe they could put in a bid to be the outsourcer or the place you go to have this done. Is that possible?
You could. I personally would have, I'm not sure it's a good idea to have the, you know, given that this would be kind of the database for all time, well, you know, for however long, for all PLDs, that it would necessarily be a good idea to have a registry on it.
Right.
That's my own personal, you know, feeling on it.